time now for hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and of course the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off with a conversation conducted by Carol Marks with JoJo Moyes. She's a New York Times best-selling author, and she's going to talk to Carol about her latest book titled One Plus One, a novel published by Pamela Dorman Books.
Let's talk about your writing and your books. They often start out from two or three images you have in your head or some ideas, which can come from news stories or things people have told you. Is that the way it goes?
That's exactly it. I try to reserve what I call cooking time in my head. So, you know, you might have an image that won't leave your head or an idea about a news story. And it's those ideas that I've learned over the years that are the ones you should write about, because that's the issue that will kind of come alive on the page. So, yeah, I just kind of cook it and throw it around in my head until I've worked out what the plot is going to be. And then I get working on characters.
Absolutely. Now, in the book, your main character, Jess Thomas, she's a single mother. She's financially on the rock. She's got two children who are dealing with two separate issues that we have today in our culture. And so let's talk about her first child. It's a girl, Tansy, and she's a math genius, but she needs economic help and social support. She wants to be successful in something that she loves. So do you hope this book will help empower girls and women to overcome a lack of encouragement that they receive in our society? Because we're told that girls and women are inherently worse at math than their male counterparts, and I think it does a lot of damage.
Well, yeah, especially when I'm writing female characters and girl characters, I just try to ask myself, if my daughter was reading this book, what message would she take from it? So when I write a female character, I try very hard not to focus on what she wears and what she buys and, you know, how she presents herself to boys. What I'm interested in is what she does and, you know, what kind of a person she actually is. And so I try to write girl characters who are resourceful or clever or kind. And so in the case of Tansy, I just wanted to write a girl who absolutely loved maths and was okay with that. You know, she's entirely comfortable in her own skin until perhaps later in the book when people are telling her she shouldn't be. But yeah, it is important to me to basically, I guess, if I have a little message, it's just to say, go and be who you want to be. You don't have to fit into some kind of society stereotype.
Well said, and I'm glad that it is in your book, that theme. And you have another child in the book, a teenage stepson, Nikki, and he doesn't fit in. He suffers from constant bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Was bullying a topic that you had wanted to write about for a long time? Was that something that you were interested in also?
Yeah, I mean, I was bullied at primary school, which I still remember, and I think it took me a lot of time to kind of understand how that plays out with a very small kid. But I guess I just also wanted to look at the vulnerability of teenagers. You know, when we see teenagers portrayed, they're often a problem. They are difficult or moody or, you know, prone to causing trouble. And actually, you know, I have two teenagers of my own, and when I look around at their friends and at them, what I see are generally kids who are actually much more vulnerable than we can see, and they're struggling with all sorts of things that we didn't have to struggle with. So, for example, bullying now, it's not what it was when I was a kid, which is kind of name-calling and isolation or, you know, throwing punches in the playground. What it is now is far more insidious and dangerous to the kid's self, which is, you know, it follows them home. It's on social media. It's on their phones. It means that they're never free of it, and I think that's really hard for them.
All right, you know, I agree. And you said that one of the other reasons you wanted to write One Plus One was to, you know, really put in the spotlight what's going on today in the economy around the world. The middle class is disappearing. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are growing in numbers. And you really ask, you know, the important question about money, which we never seem to ask in general, and that's what the specific effects of not having money can do to people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm having a great time as a novelist now, but I've had times that I've sat there and we've wondered, you know, could we take in a lodger? Could we, you know, how do we carry on living at a certain quality of life? And, you know, my family were very much not wealthy when I was growing up. We were very happy and we had enough, but, you know, my mum used to make my clothes. So I absolutely understand that. And I feel that even if it's, you know, commercial fiction, mine is not literary fiction, I think it has to reflect the world we see around us. And I worry about a world that is so far removed from what I grew up in, which is, you know, my parents always told me, if you work hard and you're talented and you really keep trying, you can be anything and you can do anything. And that's a message I very much took on board. And now what happens to kids now who are growing up, who can work as hard as they like and, you know, be talented? What happens to the kid like Tansy, who might have all those things and try and do the right thing, but is still not going to be able to get on that ladder because the society is now kind of biased against them getting there? And that concerns me. You know, even though I'm on the kind of happier side of the divide now, I don't want my kids growing up in a world where there's that much division. I would much rather see, you know, a healthy, happy middle class and things that everybody can aspire to. Sorry, I'm making this sound really political now.
No, but you know, it's true, because inequality breeds unhappiness,
yeah,
and potential violence. Now, I want to get to the amazing plot in your book, One Plus One. There are two other important characters, a potential love interest, Ed, who's coming upon hard times, although he was way up there professionally, and the very funny hound dog, Norman, who is the pet of the family. And in plot, they all, four of them, take a trip to Scotland in order to give Tansy the chance to win money, mm-hmm, in a tournament that will perhaps let her get the scholarship that she needs to pursue her math.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta say, it was brilliant to put four characters who had just met each other along with a massive dog in a small cramped car for several days, because believe me, those are the circumstances when people are going to find out about each other. I mean, that was brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Well, I couldn't agree more, because, you know, I, as a veteran of many so-called happy family days out where you go, I know, kids, let's drive to the coast, and you have this image of how things are going to be, that, you know, everyone's going to be singing in the back seat and we're all going to get there and kind of run around and have a lovely time and a picnic. And what actually happens is that someone's ill within 10 minutes of leaving the house, and two people demand to go to the, to the lavatory six times. And then somebody squashes a chocolate bar into the upholstery, and somebody else gives you the wrong direction, so you head off in the wrong direction. And I just love that disconnect between how we kind of want these journeys to be and the reality. And I thought, you know, it's one thing when you're the parent, but say you are a man who avoids chaos at all costs, and say you're a man within a very immaculate car. What happens then if
an expensive car
introduce that chaos into your little vehicle? And as you say, there's nothing like a long haul trip to learn about the person next to you, and they are all on a kind of crash course, so to speak, without the crashing, I hasten to add.
Of course, and then of course you left out the part that I always abhor. When are we getting there?
Yes. Oh, do you know? Gosh, I did, didn't I?
That'll
How
go
could
on
I have avoided
the
that quote?
Book. But I wanted to ask you about the title of your book also, One Plus One. It says a lot about the growing relationship that you depict in the book between the main character, Jess, and Ed, the man who volunteers to take them to Scotland and help them out.
Mm.
And it really says, your title says a lot about what happens after people do meet each other. So, literally, what can one plus one make mathematically when it comes to relationships?
Well, I think, yeah, that's exactly it. The whole point of this is that there are two people who are very determinedly on their own, and they've made their peace with being on their own, and they do not need anybody else, as they're both kind of keen to stress. But what they discover is that one plus one can actually add up to a whole lot more than two. You know, they are greater together than the sum of their parts, and that was a message that I just wanted to kind of convey in a lighthearted way.
And you do. Also, I want to ask, what do you hope readers will take away from One Plus One?
Well, on a serious note, I hope it would just make us think a little bit about where our society is headed in terms of wealth and disparity. But on a kind of happier note, I just hope that they will maybe laugh and cry a bit, maybe just be removed from the every day. And, you know, in my own case, I just love being transported by a story. I love entering somebody else's world for a couple of days. And I hope, if nothing else, it just gives them a fun couple of days in which to read.
That's JoJo Moyes in conversation with Carol Marks. The book that she's written is titled One Plus One, a novel. It's published by Pamela Dorman Books. You want more information? Go to jojomoyes.com. That's jojomoyes.com. Carol Marks returns in conversation with David Gottfried. That's next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and it's time now for Carol Marks to have an interview with David Gottfried. He's the founder of the World Green Building Council, the WGBC, and the U.S. Green Building Council, the USGBC. And he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Explosion Green, One Man's Journey to Green the World's Largest Industry. It's published by Morgan James Publishing.
You said life is all about our personal journey through it. So let's start out by talking about the first 10 years of your career in the real estate development business. You become a landlord. So what interests did you see the landlords putting first before their tenants, and did that begin to bother you?
Well, I think they care about their tenants, but they also feel a fiduciary responsibility to make money for themselves or their investors, for their shareholders, to pay back their banks. But when I started in real estate development, the green building movement didn't really exist, and it was mostly about penciling out the numbers, at the same time delivering a good space, but the budget was always pushed hard decisions, though, around air quality, health and productivity, toxicity of building products, energy efficiency, water efficiency, letting in the daylighting, those were just not at the table. They were, you could barely hear them in any discussions of design.
And so one day you saw some inexcusable waste when you saw a particular building being torn down, and that really bothered you. Do you think that was the catalyst for your beginning to be involved in the green movement?
Well, even before becoming a young developer in Washington, D.C., I had the privilege of studying under someone who became a mentor. We're still colleagues 30 years later. A professor at Stanford named Gil Masters, and he was kind of a young hippie electrical engineer professor who taught us about the state of the world. We studied the vital signs of Earth. We learned about the heating up 30 years ago, about the ozone hole. We learned about inefficiency and that you can save energy and then also generate clean energy through solar. And he opened my eyes very much and is still part of my life.
So you were certainly lucky to be ahead of what we're still just beginning to talk about. And one of the things I was surprised to learn from your memoir was that buildings, consume 40% of our energy, 20% of our water, and contribute 20% of our landfill waste. I had no idea.
Yeah, we just don't know. When you buy a home, you live in a home, we don't see the overall ecological impact. And if you think about it, most of us who are fortunate live in homes, and a lot of us go to work. We work in buildings, and the things we enjoy are made somewhere. And so, and then the public facilities and the sports arenas, and we're always going from A to B to a building, and those buildings consume energy and water and limited materials.
Now, how did you come up with the idea for starting the U.S. Green Building Council in 1993? That's a nonprofit, promotes eco-friendly construction. And do you think its success has been due in part to the fact that it's run like a business?
Yes, I think you nailed it there. I think that nonprofits always think they need to just ask for donations, and many times those donations are their sole source of revenue. And in a down economy, they just get hammered. Instead, they need to be run like an entrepreneurial startup from Silicon Valley. They need to go fast. They need multiple streams of revenue. They need a great mission and purpose. They need a board of directors who you treat like stockholders. And even the public that supports you and the volunteers, they need an annual report and a return on investment. We came up with the idea now going back to about 1991, 92, and it was just the start of the green building movement in the U.S. First kernel of green light was at the American Institute of Architects in D.C., and they were working with their Committee of the Environment on something called the Environmental Resource Guide. And a couple of years before that, in England, they started the first green rating system in the world called BREEAM. And the market, though, at the time in the East Coast was getting hit pretty hard in terms of the economy. It was in decline. That savings and loan crisis was just boiling up. And even though it was in decline, the firm I worked with in D.C., we were looking for expansion opportunities, and we tripped into this idea of green building, and it stuck. And I joined together in inventing the USGBC with our attorney, Mike Italiano, and then a few months later, our founding chairman, Rick Fedrizzi, who still runs the USGBC.
And you also founded the World Green Building Council. And how many countries in the world is it in, and how many projects has it been involved in?
Yeah, about 10 years after the USGBC, a gentleman from Japan kept coming to our events and saying, I want to create one of these GBCs in Japan. And in 98, I found myself on a stage in Tokyo with reverse translation, thinking, well, got Japan and the U.S., this thing's going to go global. So I hereby announce my founding of the World Green Building Council. Like when I started the U.S. GBC, though, we had no money, no people, no brochures, just a lot of piss and vinegar. And we went out on that journey. We officially formed in 02, and now we have a secretariat in Toronto. And last year it was just so exciting to see us cross 100 countries with green building councils, and many of them with their own green building rating systems or using the LEED system. I think USGBC and LEED are in 30 of those countries officially as the sole rating system. And on a voluntary basis, our LEED system is being used in 140 countries. But some of them have their own, which are quite good, and we learn from, such as Green Star in Australia that they license to New Zealand and South Africa, CASB in Japan, and China's got 3-star.
And, you know, I think that it's so crucial in its success that there's a program that rates, you know, just how well these green buildings have been built so that there's really good feedback, because otherwise you just don't have it and it's vital.
My comment on that, I think you're right on that. It's about the feedback loop of collecting the data and then measuring and monitoring and verifying, and then improving. And it's a continuous loop of self-improvement. And that's very important in every area of our lives.
That's David Gottfried in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Explosion Green, One Man's Journey to Green the World's Largest Industry. It's published by Morgan James Publishing. If you'd like some more information about it, go to the website explosiongreen.com. That's explosiongreen.com. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to that segment where we're joined for the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now is going to be talking with Heather Snyder. She's a PhD, Director of Medical and Scientific Operations at the Alzheimer's Association, and she and Richard are going to discuss the Alzheimer's Association's International Conference, and she will be sharing new data on Alzheimer's disease therapy, plus promising ideas on risk reduction and early detection. Richard, you already have that conversation wrapped up. You're the only one who's heard it. It will have its world debut here on A Touch of Gray in a few minutes. Is it something that will bring new information to our listeners? I assume that's the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's incremental. Obviously, there still is no cure for Alzheimer's, but there are things with early detection, and this is pretty much a theme that we've visited on the show many times involving many diseases, that with early detection, there are some drugs and there are some regimens that can slow the progress, which is the best we can hope for right now.
All right, well, we certainly are waiting in anticipation of this conversation. So many people in our audience know someone in their family or a loved one or a friend that is suffering with this, as you say, so far incurable disease, Alzheimer's. So that's coming up next. Now, talking about early detection on a more positive note, I am getting early signals that I detect that there is a football season brewing. Is this not the case, O-Wise?
You know what, Michael? I'm getting to the point where I think that it's always football season. You know, it used to be football started in September, ended in December, and that was the end of it. Now, with the draft and with these mini camps and now training camp. And, I mean, there might be a short two-week period in June where football isn't grabbing headlines, but it's pretty much a 12-month-a-year sport now.
I think part of that is inspired by the existence of that amazing medium known as the NFL Channel.
Well, yeah, they have to fulfill, you can't have a channel that's just on 6 months a year. It's got to be on all year, so they come up with all sorts of things. I mean, I'm just finding a lot of the stuff that's on sports, and I hate to say this as a talk show host, a sports talk show host, but so much of it is so trivial and so unimportant. For example, Mark Sanchez, who used to be the Jets quarterback, was recently let go, and he signed on with the Philadelphia Eagles. And, of course, all the New York reporters come down and want to know what Sanchez is up to and if he's got a chance to play at all. And he mentioned that the Philly fans are nicer now. Well, that got blown up into a big headline in New York. Oh, Philly fans are better than New York fans. Actually, what he meant was that the Philly fans aren't booing him like they did when he played for the Jets. So it was about a two-day kerfuffle over how Mark Sanchez is ungrateful and doesn't appreciate Jet fans just because he said Philly fans were being nicer to him.
Right, which is sort of like an observation of the obvious, that now that I'm playing there, the fans are nicer.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And even if he did knock New York fans, so what? You know, he's playing for the Eagles now. He's not playing for the Jets anymore.
Yeah.
So, but these are the types of things that turn into these tempest in a teapot things in sports media.
Doesn't this also happen in the news media? Doesn't this also happen in the field of celebrity gossip? Somebody says, I mean, everybody loves to pick a fight. It's like the playground. You know, the media loves to make a deal about things.
Well, I used to consider when sports figures said, well, I was taken out of context, or politicians use that excuse. And yet I'm finding that in a lot of cases there's validity to that, where somebody will say something, and before that there'll be a phrase or a clause that explains what they're talking about, but if you isolate that individual line, it sounds bad.
Well,
and instead of saying, well, so-and-so said this and amplify, you know, the entire meaning of it, they just pick out the most incendiary part and say, that's what he said. Oh, boy, bad guy.
You know, they've also do that in reverse. And one of the places where that has been done shamelessly has been in movie reviews and play reviews. The critics say, it was a horrible movie. There wasn't anything. Well, it was nice to look at the special effects. They were great. But on the whole, I'd stay away from this film. And then it'll say in the New York Times, great!
Special effects.
Not even special effects. Great! Joe Blow, you know, Daily News. I said, how could that critic have possibly liked that? And then I look at the entire review, and they take a positive out of context.
Well, and the other thing, our headlines are so deceiving. You know. And the writers who write the stories don't write the headlines. They're done by other people. And the headlines are designed to draw you in, and yet, you know, if you just look at the headline and go, oh, that happened, and you don't have time to read the story, you're totally misled as to what's going on.
Yeah. Context, you know, C-O-N-T-E-X-T, context is a tremendously important word in understanding reality, in understanding truth. And I think that context should be taught to children, to journalists. I think that we really have to understand the role of context in interpreting literature, interpreting headlines, interpreting politics. And I think that we as a society are lacking in that area, context. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Richard will be talking to Heather Snyder, Ph.D., about the latest breakthroughs in information in the fight against Alzheimer's disease. And then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about context, a little bit more about journalism, and a little bit more about the oncoming football season. It's all coming your way when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's the Shriners Hospital, helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with Heather Snyder, Ph.D. She's the Director of Medical and Scientific Operations at the Alzheimer's Association, and she's going to talk to Richard about the Alzheimer's Association's international conference and share new data on Alzheimer's disease therapy, plus promising ideas on risk reduction and early detection.
Heather, welcome to the program. Thank you very much. And I understand there have been breakthroughs in early detection with Alzheimer's.
We're seeing a number of studies looking at the latest in early detection and diagnosis. There have been two studies that are being presented here at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference looking at the loss of an individual's ability to smell and how that may be an early indicator of brain changes associated with Alzheimer's disease. You can imagine a sniff test, maybe an easy way, a low-cost and non-invasive way to determine if someone's at an increased risk for developing Alzheimer's disease.
Well, that's going to send a lot of us into a panic saying, oh, do you smell that? No, I don't smell it. Oh, you might have Alzheimer's. So how do we differentiate between normal, gee, I don't smell that, to, well, this could be a symptom of Alzheimer's?
Both of these studies used a standardized way to measure smell. So it's not necessarily something that we would notice in our everyday life. There are the top 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, and you can find more information about those at ALZ.org. But it's things that change over time. So something that you've always done your entire life, and then you have a change in your ability to do that type of task. If you're concerned about yourself or a loved one, the Alzheimer's Association would encourage you to speak to a healthcare professional.
Now, I know a lot of people are reluctant to do this only because since there is no cure, And they feel, well, gee, there's nothing I can do about it except if I know I'm going to worry about it. So why be diagnosed early? But we do have some signs that early detection may help prolong the process. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Alzheimer's Association is a big proponent of early detection and diagnosis because once someone has a diagnosis or is aware that they're living with Alzheimer's disease, access to resources and services is overall very helpful for the family, and we know that it improves the long-term outcomes. In addition, they're able to plan for their both financial and their care future, participate in a clinical study, become an advocate, and be a voice for those that can no longer speak for themselves. We hear this from families all across the country in terms of the value of an early diagnosis and detection about what those changes in their brain may be happening.
And we also understand that there are some lifestyle issues here that people should be aware of that could help in terms of fighting off Alzheimer's long term. Tell us some about some of those.
We're seeing a number of studies that are looking at lifestyle factors that may increase or decrease an individual's risk associated with Alzheimer's disease. And one particular study that's coming out of Finland is actually looking at putting a combination of lifestyle interventions together in a recipe almost. Things like nutritional guidance, physical activity, mental stimulation, controlling cardiovascular risk factors, and putting those factors together has demonstrated after 2 years that individuals' memory improved. So while it needs to be replicated, it is the first solid evidence that this type of recipe of lifestyle intervention may reduce your risk of dementia.
And it's interesting that high blood pressure, which is something that normally you don't want, actually may be a positive thing when it comes to Alzheimer's.
In one study from a group in California, they looked at a population over the age of 90, and they actually showed that high blood pressure may be beneficial for those individuals. We've known from previous studies that high blood pressure at midlife is actually associated with an increased risk. We see something similar when we look at obesity. So continuing to understand how these risk factors may be involved at increasing and decreasing an individual's risk associated with Alzheimer's disease is very important.
Now, of course, whenever you have a conference like this, people want to know, well, what about a cure? How far away are we from a cure? What kind of progress are we making? What can you tell us at this point?
We continue to make tremendous progress in this field. However, our continued progress will be directly proportional to our investment in Alzheimer's disease research to continue to gather the information we need, invest in the pipeline for therapy development, and move us to that place where we ultimately have a therapy that will stop or slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. However, for the first time, the field is talking about possible prevention of Alzheimer's disease, looking at different potential interventions that are coming in at the earliest stage before an individual is losing their memories to see if we can stop or slow the progression of the disease.
Now, Heather, this may not be in your particular purview, but I'll ask the question anyway. Recently, we had a friend who passed from Alzheimer's. And, of course, when something like that happens, you want to extend your sympathies to the family, but you also want to do something meaningful to help, and you want to maybe contribute some money to a charity that can do something positive as opposed to a charity that absorbs a lot of the money and overhead and such. Is there a place where we can find a list of worthy charities that are fighting Alzheimer's in areas where we can help actually when something like this does happen?
There are a number of different resources where you can identify organizations that are investing in Alzheimer's disease. I can tell you that the Alzheimer's Association is the largest nonprofit funder of Alzheimer's disease research in the world, and you can find out more information about all of those specifics on our website at alz.org.
That's Heather Snyder, Ph.D., in conversation with our senior correspondent Richard Neer here on A Touch of Gray. And if you'd like more information, go to alz.org. That's alz.org. Richard Neer returns for the final segment of this big two-hour get-together next, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of our big two-hour get-together and more conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, good interview with Heather Snyder, Ph.D., and as promised, let's get back to talking a bit about journalism, context, political correctness, playing gotcha. And, of course, football season is coming. You know, you're involved in so many different disciplines. You're a sports talk host. You're a generalist. You even have a program on podjockey.com in which you interview novelists. I mean, you're a multimedia guy. Do you think that this tendency to take people out of context is just in sports or just in hard news, or do you see it as a widespread phenomenon?
Well, I think it's done on purpose, really. I think the media, you know, there's so many media stations, platforms competing for our attention now. There's cable TV, there's over-the-air TV, there's bloggers, there are websites, I mean, you know, all the different places, radio. There's so many different areas that are trying to get our attention, and it's like a kid waving at some, hey, look at me. I don't know, when you read a newspaper, do you also see the little things on the side that say, shocking news about, you won't believe your eyes, this is unbelievable, you know, you see all these little headlines and pictures, a lot of them involving naked women, of course, but, you know, it's always, you'll be surprised, you'll be shocked, and when you hear, I'll be shocked, let me see what that is, and it turns out not to be so shocking at all, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, hyperbole is the standard. And you know, even look at the words now that we use in our society. Awesome,
That's awesome is the modern day equivalent of it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Awesome used to mean like, my God, this is the most miraculous thing I've ever seen. It inspires awe. Now
awesome,
it's like,
yes.
Yeah, you're right. Anything that's pretty cool is awesome.
Awesome was the parting of the Red Sea by Moses.
Yeah, that's awesome, you know, but, you know, catching a fish in the Red Sea, that's normal.
Yeah, awesome.
Cool.
I went to a restaurant the other day and ordered a chicken Caesar salad. And the guy says, "Do you want the new light dressing on it?" I said, "Yes." And he says to me, "Let's do it." Let's do it. I turned to my wife and I said, "Wow, what a commitment I've just made. We're gonna have the light dressing on the salad. Let's do it." Yeah, I've been thinking about it for 2 days. It's so funny. This hyperbole, this feigned excitement, this shocking news, you know?
Well, I was on the phone with a customer service rep yesterday, actually, and at the end of the conversation, it's, "You have a great weekend. You have an awesome weekend."
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll plan to do that.
Actually, like, I would just like to relax.
I don't know this person. Yeah. I've just been on the phone with them for 10 minutes, and they're all wishing me, like, you know, that I'll hit the lottery over the weekend or something.
So we have a couple of minutes left in conclusion, and we did promise football. So I just, you know, I'm going to ask you a simple question. So who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
By what score?
People ask me, how are the Giants going to do this year? Now, the Giants and most NFL teams turn over 30 to 35% of their roster every year.
Wow, of course. So there's no way to know.
Yeah, exactly. So if you believe that a third of the roster is going to be different, how can you possibly predict who's going to win games? If the third that they bring in are great players and they all excel and stay healthy, team will be a lot better. If they get hurt or they're not so good, they'll be worse.
Good point. Next week, we'll tell everybody how the stock market will perform over the next year. Richard, thank you so much for joining us. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Thank you, Beverly Santinello on the front line, our producer. And thank you to the host and founder of the program, its guiding light, Carol Marks. I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.